Before introducing our keynote speaker, I have a greeting to the conference, and it reads, to the participants in the June 15th, 2014 New York Conference of the Schiller Institute, An End to War. It is a great honor for me to greet and congratulate you on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of the Schiller Institute. Dear colleagues, the Institute has been and will always be a unique platform for dialogue and for the development of important solutions to various aspects of contemporary social, political, and economic development and humanitarian cooperation in the world. Many of your ideas, proposals, and thoughts have found demand in the development of valuable initiatives of practical significance in the areas of social justice, the global order, and the prevention of regional conflicts. Besides the solution of strictly practical tasks related to current day-to-day problems of our mutual development, you also make, on a daily basis, a weighty contribution to the conceptualization and solution of urgent issues of geopolitics and public life. I am certain that your conference today will provide an important impetus to discussions concerning the equality of peoples, regardless of where they live, the sovereign rights of peoples to self-determination, and the choice of methods for building a harmonious future based on peace, cooperation, and good neighborly relations. I wish you fruitful work, dear colleagues, and peace to your houses. Signed, Sergei Glazyev, advisor to the President. Advisor to the President of the Russian Federation. One of the elements of the Schiller Institute that we always emphasize is Frederick Schiller's warning that often in history, great moments find little people, and that there are only certain apertures in history in which you can change everything. Helga LaRouche often remarks that one of the very first pieces that she wrote in her political career is called, you know, A Revolution is a Question of Time. And when you have the time, you need those people to stand up and be heroic. And the person who's going to give our keynote speech has demonstrated that kind of heroism and that kind of character. Keisha Rogers, who is a member of the National Committee or the National Policy Committee of the LaRouche Political Action Committee, and former U.S. Senate candidate of Texas. Keisha?
Thank you. Well, I have to say, first of all, that I'm not heroic. When I'm given a mission, I answer the call. And I think that what I'd like to do today is to give each and every one of you a mission and give you a calling that you must seek to answer. And in order to do that, I know that the first panel started off with the discussion of what has happened and what has gone awry, what has gone wrong with our nation, and how the world looks at the United States. Well, what I want to talk about is that the conception that you have of the United States is not the real American tradition. And I want to talk to you today about how we must fight to restore the uniquely true American tradition that once inspired all nations and rid of the imperial tradition, which has now usurped what we once were proud of in this great nation. And that's the optimism of what Helga was speaking of earlier. The nation of the United States, represented under the leadership and the ideas of Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, John Quincy Adams, and others, who were not heroes, but actually had a calling and a mission that they answered to. And so Many of you know that throughout the United States, I led a campaign in the state of Texas, joined by my colleague in San Francisco, Michael Steger, running for the U.S. House of Representatives against Nancy Pelosi, the infamous or Nancy Pelosi. And the idea of our two campaigns as the two leading states in the union that once actually represented a direction for the nation of the greatest commitment to agricultural scientific progress, that the state of Texas, where you saw President John F. Kennedy lead the way in crafting a vision and commitment with the commitment to the space program, where you see that most of the production and food production in California was what was essential for the food production that went out to most of the population and most of the world. All of that identity, which was taken away when you saw from west of the Mississippi all the way throughout the two largest states of the United States, Texas and California, being destroyed by an identity which had usurped the real American patriotic tradition for the benefit of the imperial push for war, economic chaos, and social distress. As I intervened in the state of Texas on the most conservative state in the union, and Michael intervened on the state of California, the most liberal state in San Francisco, mind you, California, in the union, what we were both able to do is to recruit the entire generation of forgotten men in the segments of the population from both parties in the tradition of John F. Kennedy. And you found that people who thought that there were no common interests among these two groups found that their common interests lied in something greater in terms of their commitment to all wanting to act for the betterment of our children, our grandchildren, all recognizing that President John F. Kennedy brought that out in everyone, that it wasn't just that was something that actually took away the divisiveness of party politics, as George Washington once said, which was the bane of all nations' existence. So our two campaigns reflected a universal quality of the American system to the international aspects of our constituents. And as we look at, so we went around and organized throughout the state and throughout both Texas and California, recognizing that it was a vast array of people from different backgrounds, whether it was Chinese, Russian, Mexican, Latin American, that all of these people had one unique goal in mind, and that is that they came to the United States because of the vast greatness that it once represented. And they saw in running into our campaigns that can become a reality once again. And that our campaigns, when these people came to the United States, whether it was the Chinese working with President Lincoln on the development of the Transcontinental Railway System, the Irish, the Russians, that was the United States they knew of. It was the United States which invoked the international reflections of an America which was embodied in great leaders such as Sun Yat-sen, Benito Juarez, and other great minds who saw that the traditions of the United States were not just for the United States, but they were for all of mankind to be able to partake in this true freedom that they could participate in as well. Now, so let's take a look at, we've been living through three Bush administrations and one and a half Obama administrations. You got Papa Bush, too evil, Baby Bush, just dumb, and Obama, well, he ain't just right. And all of these administrations have shown how far astray we as a nation have gone, how far we have gone away from that American tradition. As you see, pawns, as you see, presidents acting as pawns to a bankrupt British Empire, destroying the very core of the American tradition defined in our nation's Constitution and its preamble, which uniquely identifies us sovereign and free from the destructive grip of empire. The fight for this identity has not always come easily. Throughout the test of our nation's strength, great leaders have had to fight off the grip of the ugly control of the empire's intent to suppress mankind through the evil of the satanic Zeus, to take away and destroy the creative powers of mankind from creating a world free from thermonuclear war and hunger that could come together to solve the problems that confronted mankind. My campaign I waged to stop the outbreak of thermonuclear war, of World War III. And the focus of mine and Michael's campaign together was to bring about a renewed mission for the United States to inspire the world as Franklin Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy had intended to bring an end to war. Now, interestingly enough, that in order to do this, I ironically had to put a Hitler mustache on the President of the United States. As a Democrat in the United States. And I put this mustache on the President of the United States to actually lead the nation out of fear, to free people from the bestial grip that had started not with President Obama, but with a society that had gone along with popular opinion over truth, and which had set out to destroy itself since the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Throughout the recent period, more and more people have come to realize that popular opinion is wrong. It tells you the way to avoid war is to be divisive and not tell the truth. What more and more people have come to understand as they encountered my campaign in the United States, Michael's campaign, the work of the LaRouche Movement, and the Schiller Institute, is that it's only through defying popular opinion and telling the truth can you gain victory over the enemies of mankind. As we know, victory is not simply expressed in a vote. It is, I think about what we did in Texas. Those who did everything in their power to make sure that my campaign was attacked was viciously for telling the truth and tried to do everything to make sure that we were not victorious, actually failed in their endeavors. Because victory is not a Pyrrhic victory. Victory is a victory to actually save the existence of all of mankind from an empire. And as those individuals are sitting there looking at what they just did, they realize they don't have a direction for where to go next and where to actually lead this nation. And they will be calling us back in soon. So, victory is not simply expressing a vote. It is transforming the thinking of your society to not be enslaved, to fight for a better future. And that's what people were able to be encouraged by and inspired by as they encountered our campaign, that they too can actually free themselves from the grip of empire, can actually restore commitment as we once had with the identity of our uniquely American patriotic tradition under our Constitution. And when people ran into our campaign, they realized that this was something that they had to participate in, and they had to defy popular opinion because it was the only thing that can save their lives. And it's only through breaking free of empire can we put an end to war. Only by defining a vision for the future of mankind can mankind truly be free. So, Mr. LaRouche has put out what I define as the scientific and revolutionary 4 points, which define the future for mankind to crush an empire. The United States, if we do our job, can and must now be saved and must retake its rightful place as a leader in society in promoting the most advanced scientific progress of mankind. And the institution of the presidency of the United States must be redefined according to the principles laid out in the principle of the preamble of our United States Constitution, enacted within its limits of power, as we have not seen under this current administration. As invoked in the administration of our first president, General George Washington, along with his brilliant and trusted Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton. As economist Lyndon LaRouche has laid out, the 4 crucial steps for recovery, which were referenced here earlier today by Mrs. LaRouche, which must be put forth immediately to save the world and promote the real identity of a world of truly sovereign nation states, which, 1, call for freeing our nation of the grip of the evil empire and its control of Wall Street interests, to crush Wall Street now, Glass-Steagall banking reorganization as a first step must be redefined. 2, we must restore a credit system defined by Alexander Hamilton. And 3, the use of federal credit in adopting a fusion driver for the nation. And that is the vision that we once had when we actually said, we do these things with President John F. Kennedy, not because they're easy, but because they're hard. This was a vision for going to the moon, to actually recognize that we were going to actually act for the benefit and interest of all mankind, and not for Wall Street and not for an empire. And so the question at hand, as Mr. LaRouche has defined, is, what is the value of human beings? What is the significance of human beings? What is mankind's unique role to act? That power lies in recognizing the creative powers unique only to human beings. History and events are not trapped in a vacuum of empty space and time. As we as human beings have the power to direct and change the course of history and to define our future, we must put an end to the bankrupt British Empire and all of its intent to reduce the world population throughout the planet, destroying the productive and creative powers of mankind to replenish, multiply, and subdue the earth. We must eliminate the financial oligarchy system of bail-in once and for all. Anti-science green agenda must be eliminated. No more fracking. The revolt that we're seeing coming from within the United States against this bestial agenda and within nations around the world are those who understand that we cannot live in a world, as President Abraham Lincoln once said, half slave, half free. The current war drive that's being pushed on behalf of the British Empire, contributing directly to the global war of extinction, can only be brought to an end through the development of truly peaceful relations among sovereign nations. This signifies a return to the productive powers of mind and an increase in the commitment to scientific progress, with an increase in the higher and higher states of energy flux density. We must soar and take dominion over our solar system. We must move forward with a commitment to man's identity in space, to answer and solve the problems of hunger, of economic collapse that actually devastate the planet today. We can bring about a collaboration among nation states on the interests and of the common aims of mankind. This has been the inspiration of the United States, which has acted in accord when it's acted in accordance with the truly Promethean identity of man to define a future of progress for all mankind. President John F. Kennedy spoke about at the 30th anniversary of the Tennessee Valley Authority at Muscle Shoals. He speaks of the inspiration that power of this powerful work, which gave the world an impact that it would bestow on future generations to come. And he says, and I quote, "As a final example of its national role, I would cite to you, and I consider this one of the most important contributions of the Tennessee Valley, and it's written in, and it isn't written in any credit or debt books, the 2,000 people who came from abroad to the TVA from other islands, kings, prime ministers, students, technicians, people who are uncommitted, people who don't know which way to go, people who are unsure. They come here and gain an impression not by merely visiting Washington or New York, but by coming to this valley. They gain an impression of vitality and growth, and the ability of people to work together in a free society. This has been one of the most powerful advertisements for the picture of the United States around the world that we have had. For these people come from nations whose poverty threatens to exceed their hopes, who do not feel they can solve their problems. They come here and compare this valley today to what it was 30 years ago. And they leave here feeling that they, too, can solve their problems in a system of freedom." And you think about John F. Kennedy was looking at how the past was shaping the future. He was living in the future, and what happened during the period of the Tennessee Valley Authority of President Franklin Roosevelt was a thought process in mind for what would shape the future to come. And as Kennedy said, we can look forward into the future and say, what will shape the year of 1984. We now are in the year of 2014. What will shape the year of 2030? That's my tasks for you all. I want to close with by sharing a personal story with you. And having just concluded both my campaign and Michael's campaign, in which we effectively went to war with profound ideas to save mankind from war with thermonuclear weapons, my mind was naturally drawn to a moment of profound reflection. So my husband and I, we took a trip, and we took the opportunity as we were out helping Michael with his campaign in San Francisco to take some time to visit the majestic Muir Woods National Park. And this is just north of San Francisco. And here you find great redwood trees, thousands of feet tall. And these are one of the oldest living species on Earth. These trees have been around for over 65 million years, longer than any nation. At the entry of the park, there's a stump showing a tree that was born in the year of 909. And it was alive when Columbus sailed the Atlantic. It was alive when the Declaration of Independence was written. And it was alive for well over 1,000 years. And to our delight, walking among this living cathedral of trees, we came across a plaque. And it turns out that after World War II, when 46 nations of the world came together to put an end to war and to dedicate themselves to the peace that comes through mutual progress, this was the spot in the forest that President John F. Kennedy had intended them to be brought through. For as it says, only with this focused attention upon the nation's interest in preserving these mighty trees for posterity, but in such a temple of peace, the delegates would gain a perspective and sense of time that would be obtained nowhere better than in such a forest. I would suggest that maybe we all, in remembrance of that, can go find a park or a forest and reflect. But I think it's fitting that two minds separated by almost 90 years but engaged in the same struggle for freedom of man would reach the same conclusion in the same place. And this is an example of what Mr. LaRouche defines in his fourth point as he talks about the unique role of man and the example of Vernadsky to actually gain power and dominion over our solar system. And the Vernadskian conception of man as that identified with the Promethean idea of looking into the future. And I want to read a quote from Vernadsky, Vladimir Vernadsky, coming from as we think about those 40 representatives from those 46 nations sitting among these beautiful forests where the idea of the noosphere coming together with the biosphere couldn't have been more clear. And you think, Vernadsky says, mankind's power is not connected with its matter, but with its brain and its work guided by its mind. In the geological history of the biosphere, A great future is opened to man if he realizes it and does not direct his mind and work to self-destruction. Goes on to say, mankind taken as a whole is becoming a powerful geological force. Humanity's mind and work face the problem of reconstructing the biosphere in the interest of freely thinking mankind as a single entity. The new state of the biosphere that we are approaching without notice, it is the noosphere. This is the true American identity that nations around the world have come to love and admire, and which we can once again restore in a world free of empire. And that is the mission and the very purpose for mankind, which brings us here together today on this 30th anniversary of the Schiller Institute, to dedicate mankind to a peace which comes only through mutual progress. And I leave you with that.